What up, everybody? Welcome to the Smoking Tire Podcast. We got a new advertiser this week. This one's brought to you by My Wall Street. You know, I don't understand a thing about the stock market. That's why I tend to buy watches and cars. And when I first started investing in U.S. stocks, I found that brokers made it really easy to invest in any stock I wanted, but I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't know what to do. I had no idea if the portfolio I was building or the stocks I was investing in were going to make me any sort of return. That's where My Wall Street comes in. Even though it was easy to set up a broker, but I didn't know how to get money, well, My Wall Street is now there for me. They offered a short list of stocks that their experienced investors had spent countless hours researching. And that's the difference with My Wall Street. You're the one in control, but they provide you with the information you need in the form of those thoroughly researched stocks. They act as an investing companion, not a broker. There is a difference. Brokers get cuts from when your trades. They incentivize you to make these trades. My Wall Street doesn't do that. They help you take the first step into the world of investing, guiding you towards making educated decisions throughout your investing life. Here's the deal, folks. All our listeners can access the entire My Wall Street app on iOS and Android for free. Use it for 30 days. Free instead of the normal 7-day trial. Visit MyWallStreet, that's MyWallST.com/TST to download the app and get access to their market-beating stock picks and expert guidance. After your trial, you can continue your investing journey with them for just $9.99 a month. That's MyWallStreet, spelled MyWallST.com/TST to download their app and get access to their market-beating stocks and expert guidance. MyWallStreet.com/TST. Get it, folks. Remember that Nexbase dash cam we were talking about? Oh, they back too, and they took my advice, and they upgraded their discount code, not only giving you guys, the listeners, more, but also making it simpler. Nexbase is the world's leading dash cam brand. They are now available in the U.S. You've seen the crazy Russian dash cam videos. You know the ridiculous, stupid, and dangerous things that can happen on the road, or maybe you just want to share something on social media. Nexbase is more than just a dash cam. The Series 2 range includes 5 models packed with exciting features, stunning image quality, 1440p resolution, and an IPS touchscreen. Don't fear parking lot hit and runs. Intelligent parking mode detects and records any movement around your vehicle while your vehicle is parked. There's an SOS feature, potentially life savings, with immediately alerting emergency services if it detects a real problem. There's cabin cameras, it gives you this lovely peace of mind. It's good to have, man. Evidence. It's evidence. And here's the deal. Code 20SMOKING on Amazon. That's 20SMOKING will get you 20% off the entire Nexbase dash cam range on Amazon. Amazon. Code 20SMOKING gets you 20% off all Nexbase dash cams on Amazon. You heard that? 20SMOKING. 20SMOKING. 20% off all Nexbase dash cams on Amazon. Get them, folks. They're sweet. I've got one. And speaking of that, the Brio Beardscape, also sweet. I also have one. This is a great buzzer, trimmer, beard trimmer. And I ended up there after trying all the other trimmers available normally, commercially. There's always something. The Brio Beardscape is the one that does it all because it's portable, it's light, it's battery powered, but the battery it's got is a beast. It lasts for a real long time. Same, the motor, also quite beast. It cuts through my Syrian thick fur, which might be slightly TMI, but that's neither here nor there. But it's got a battery display so you know exactly how much shave time remains, a ceramic blade that you don't have to oil as often as stainless steel. It stays nice and sharp, and a handy carrying case. Upgrade your face, folks. The Brio Beardscape rules. Go to Brio for Life. That's B-R-I-O, the number 4life.com. Brio4life.com. Use code SMOKING, S-M-O-K-I-N-G, at checkout at Brio4life.com. Upgrade your shave, upgrade your face, look good like me. That's what it is. Lastly, of course, AutoTempest.com. They've been with us a long time. We love them. When you're shopping for a car, go to AutoTempest.com. You know why? It's not a car site. It's all the car sites. It aggregates all the important used car sites into one place. Saves you time, saves you money, because your time equals your money. At least my time equals my money. AutoTempest, it looks at all the main car retail platforms like Cars.com, Cars Direct, Car Soup, and eBay Motors, and it connects them with the results from Auto Trader and all of Craigslist nationally. They are time savers because you don't have to type in the same garbage over and over and over again. It searches all the sites at once. How hard is that? They don't want anything from you, just to use the other sites through them, which you can do because it uses all the other sites at once. Got it? AutoTempest.com is the jam. All right, on this episode of the show, Scott Pruitt is in studio. You've probably heard the name. This dude is a racing legend. He's like 60 years old, but he looks like he's 40, man. The guy is in shape. And he has had a crazy career racing open-wheel cars, sports cars, Indy cars, NASCARs. He is currently, I think, the head test driver for Lexus and designs a lot of their motorsport programs for customers. And he's got 13 Rolex Daytonas, which is not that impressive on its own until you learn that he got all of them for winning the 24 Hours of Daytona. We call that the hard way in the watch world. Scott Pruitt on the Smoking Tire Podcast. Scott Pruitt is here on the Smoking Tire Podcast. Are we live, Zach?
We are.
We are. I hope so, because boy, did I do it. Just dive in on it. No, we are. There we are. What's happening? I made it a little awkward by opening the show by feeding Scott Pluots.
I know. I got sorry, a little juice.
Are you like sticky?
Yeah, I got a little juice. I'm sorry. I left a little bit of stickiness on your out of the pool.
This is my home field advantage. I just give everyone sticky fruit before.
I like it. I like it. Well, the thing is, you did right. That was a really good pool.
Pluot. You said it Pluot. It's Pluot. Pluot.
Pluot.
It's plum and apricot and other things.
Yeah.
Mixed.
It was still good,
it's
man.
The best. That's like, it's the most California thing ever. Let's have some fruits and make them like, taste like candy.
It's the labradoodle. It's the labradoodle.
It's the labradoodle. Yeah, like designer that. Fruit. Uh-huh. Yeah. How you doing? Thanks for coming down.
I'm good. You know, I was down here filming a Lexus commercial and had a day off. It was a lot of fun down in Long Beach. Really weird being in Long Beach, not racing. Yeah. Something coming down shoreline.
Were you actually driving on the circuit, but the circuit ain't there?
Little bits of it. We were. It was really, we have a new RX coming with some small updates to it. And,
easy to slide, I bet.
Fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
According to the Instagram commercials.
So I needed something to do, so I'm really happy to get on your program.
So Scott, Zach, he rolled up when I was outside, and I'm driving this, you know, mega hot F-Pace SVR and super blue, and it's really angry and shouty and look at me and listen to me and wah! Scott rolls up in a rented Dodge Charger, which whatever, you rent a Dodge Charger. Yep. It's got the fucking green splitter guards on it.
No way.
Yeah, it hurts his fucking stocking these
they're
things.
Green?
Oh, it's
yellow,
crazy.
Yellow, green.
Yeah, they're bright yellow.
Whatever they are, they're nuclear waste colored, but they're on the rental cars.
Somebody asked me, hey, are those real active splitters? I said, of course.
Active
yeah,
splitters.
More. Well, I guess they do
some
add
guy with
some
a picnic chair
force.
In the back is going, yup.
That's crazy. A rental car.
Active splitters.
Rental car. Yeah, right. Exactly. Crazy, crazy stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Do you just get really sad when you get into rental cars?
They're all the same, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You never get something fun. Hopefully they don't smell stinky at some way, somehow. And hopefully they haven't had too many issues with them. Because I know some race car drivers in the past that they would have abused
well,
at rental
of course.
Cars in days gone by.
I mean, I hesitate to call myself a race car driver of any kind. But I have driven race cars. And on weekends when I've driven race cars, I have most certainly scouted the track in whatever fucking rental.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I probably got about 50, 60 laps of Mid-Ohio in an Impala.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
No, shameless.
Yeah, right.
Utterly
right, right,
shamelessly.
Right.
NCM in a Nissan Versa for 40 laps? Why not?
Yeah, when you do that, and when I went to, so many, many years ago, I went to Europe, tested Formula One. And so they said, well, we're testing down in Estoril, Portugal. Come
when
on down.
When you say tested, this is a team invited you to come drive and maybe race for them.
Yes.
Can you say what team it was?
Yeah, it was Gerard LaRousse, and it was Cosworth powered. I was driving for Ford at the time. This was 1987,
okay.
So probably before
that's
you
like,
were born.
No, I was born in 81.
Okay.
I'm not that young.
Yeah.
But peak, that's like pretty much peak scary.
That
for
was
Formula One cars. That's turbo engines, right?
Yes, yeah.
And manual gearboxes.
Manual gearbox, H-pattern, and
I've seen that Senna video at Monaco.
Crazy, crazy stuff. And they said, "Yeah, come on down, do the test." So to your point, rented the car and spent that morning trying to learn circuit. I've never been to
at
the track. Didn't have simulators back then like we have today, which makes things a lot easier. And went down there and ran, for a couple hours. Did really good. Philippe Elliot was there testing. I came within about a second and a half slower than he was. And he just raced over the weekend and was there testing. I'd never been
You'd
in
never
an open
been
wheel
there.
Car
well,
before.
That's pretty good. You've never been in an open wheel car and you've never been to that track?
Well, right. So
very good, I would say.
Went good. It was just, in those days, it was just difficult. And I even think now, it's so difficult for an American to make that break to Formula One, to really get accepted and to get the traction they need. So then I refocused my energy on, because I was with Ford at the time. We had just won a championship, actually two championships in 86. We won the IMSA championship and the Endurance championship. And so
that's in Fox Body race cars, right?
What's that?
Mustangs?
Those were
IMSA,
Mustang. Oh, those are great looking cars. Man.
Yeah.
GTO.
Yeah. I watched them race at the Long Beach Historic race this year.
Yeah.
That was badass, man.
Yeah.
Those cars ruled. Oh, look at that. That's a hot looking, Motorcraft branded car.
Crazy fast, too. I mean, we were Daytona 200 miles an hour.
What a great looking race car that is. Those was there anything at all related to the actual Fox? That's a full tube chassis car, right?
Yeah. Well, they're ground up built. Race cars. That was actually Roush's program. I had a lot of fun doing that. We won four championships in 3 years and looking to make that next step.
Wait, I'm sorry, four and three?
So we want four and three.
What year did you win more than one championship?
Well, we won the Endurance championship in IMSA.
Okay.
And we won the GTO championship.
Oh, separate deals.
It's
right.
Two separate deals. And then Trans Am championship, and that'd be 87. And then back another IMSA championship in 88.
Were those the same cars running all those different series? It was different cars. Okay.
Yeah, so we still had the prototypes. So we were in the second division. GTO was over, I think they called it over 4 liters. That could be wrong. That's a long time ago now.
Yeah.
But we had 680 horsepower, something
not
ridiculous.
Much.
Yeah.
It's not
in
much.
Those days. And then, so we drove Mustangs in the IMSA series. I drove Capris in the Trans Am series.
Ooh.
Actually, a great memory is here. I have two really great memories. Both at in SoCal at Riverside.
You have three children, Scott. Just want to remind you.
Yeah.
Two great memories.
Racing memories.
Okay.
Okay.
Riverside?
Very first ever Trans Am race I did. I had raced on Saturday in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jack Roush wanted me to come race at Riverside. Flew out after that race, won that race, came here. And started last because I didn't qualify. Started last and then went on to win the race.
Oh,
my very
go.
First Trans Am race, Riverside, and to come away with a victory. And that was so we'd ran Capris in the so
that's a
there you go
looking
Capris
car right
in
there.
The Trans Am series. So they didn't compete each other. So it was either Ford in one series and then Lincoln Mercury in a different series. And then they just kind of
was there ever
back
a Lincoln.
Forth. Yeah, right.
Did you have
big four-door?
A Mark 7?
Yeah, exactly.
Race? Actually,
boat cruiser.
Somebody render out a Lincoln Mark 7 IMSA GTO car. I bet you'd look cooler. Or actually, you know what? The Cougar. The one with the squared off rear windshield. Because there was some like
60s Cougar?
Mustang Cougar? Like an 80s Cougar. Mm. Like, because there was a car racing in IMSA of that generation that was like a Buick or
there
something
were,
that had the real
right,
squared off
right,
roof.
Right, right. There was so many
yeah,
different
that Cougar,
cars.
No,
imagine
no,
this
Matt,
Cougar.
No,
yeah.
no.
No, fuck out of
no,
here.
No,
imagine
no,
this
no.
Cougar.
No, no.
But no?
No can do, man.
No takers?
It's scaring me just looking at those pictures.
What did we see the other day?
No
we, were, we were in line for Christian's show and that guy drove by and we were like, oh, what is this? Something nice. And then it was like a man. It was like that half avocado, half white, bathroom colored car, super mint. That was driving it was old and clearly bought it new.
Oh yeah, no, it was like an '80s Regal, like just a
the
Regal.
The back window looked kind of
They squared it off. That like I think every manufacturer at this point in the '80s fully vertical rear window option on something.
Absolutely. There you go. Actually, bro, I think it goes beyond vertical.
Oh no, you are correct.
It's like it's like convex. It's like concave, sorry.
You take off the trunk, you got a pickup truck.
There you go.
Bro.
And a lot of guys did that.
We have an idea now.
A lot of guys did that, man.
All right, what is the most fun race car you've ever driven?
Well, I've...
Whether or not you want anything.
Well,
just pure fun of driving.
Now, it's such a... You know, the good Lord has absolutely blessed me, because when I look back at my career... Indy cars, sports cars, and I've driven everything for sports cars, and NASCAR. There's so many great races. I mean, how do you compare racing the Indy 500 to the Daytona 500 to going to the Michigan 500 to Darlington,
Because you have to ignore the race. We're not talking about the race. We're just talking about the car. In fact, forget a race. You're by yourself on a racetrack.
For going fast?
Yeah, for having fun. For the
Indy
fun.
Cars.
For fun.
The mid-90s Indy car. You had tire wars. You had chassis wars. You had engine wars. All those things together. I mean, we were turning my last year in Indy car. Actually, here in Fontana, qualified first. The average speed was 236. Top speed was like 247 at Fontana, 2 mile over.
Fucking Fontana?
Crazy.
Oh, my God.
And we were turning those things.
Is that fast speed? Is that measured on the front straight, probably, right?
The front and back.
On both?
Yeah. It was hauling,
man. Was it smoother back then?
It was.
Okay.
It still had a big bump.
I would hope so.
This big old bump in turn two. It still had the bump, but now everything just got a little worse.
240.
So. No, it gets steep at that, I don't know if it's considered one or two. That this, when the banking tightens up at the end of the front, is that considered two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
That's bumpy. It's bumpy in a street car.
Now worse than then, because this was when the track was still still new. So, but that, I mean, so for going, when we tested it at Phoenix, 1 mile oval, and we're getting around a 1 mile oval in less than 20 seconds, 19.8, 19.7. We're rolling in turn one at 210 miles an hour.
In a 1 mile oval?
1 mile oval.
Yikes.
So to answer your question for going fast.
It's just that.
It's insane. It was insane. And you had to be on the edge all the time. Like when you're qualifying at Long Beach, if you didn't come with scrapes on the outside of the winglets on the rear, or you didn't come with the tires had scrapes on them from just scraping the walls, using every piece of asphalt you can, you're leaving time on the track. It's crazy time.
It's so wild.
Wow.
And we were turning, I mean, these are overhead cam engines, and we're turning them to 18,500 RPM.
Makes you feel really less, about like redlining your street engine.
Well, now, you know, they pulled everything back. So everything, you know, because they just got going too fast. And it's not that the cars were going too fast. It's that they've gotten too fast for the tracks.
Yeah, now I mean, if you have a crash, we've learned a couple of times.
Unfortunately, we have.
It's a pretty serious cheese grater situation.
Yeah.
I wish there was a less gruesome way to describe it than cheese grater. But unfortunately, that's pretty much the...
There's no easy ends. I mean, when you talk about crashing, I've broke so many things. I mean, I've shattered my ankles, broke my knees, broke my back, shoulders, ribs, elbows, wrists, concussions. You know, the joke is I don't remember how many concussions I had. So
we had a dude on the show yesterday who said he's had over 30 surgeries. And he died twice. This is like an off-road motorcycle guy who was
scary.
He was a great show, but do you have the thing? The race car driver thing?
I do.
You do?
If it's the thing we're talking about.
I mean, the thing, like, you know, obviously you've been so successful at racing, it's almost ridiculous for me to ask you if you have it. But, like, you know, I almost want to feel like Alan Prost maybe didn't have it. And some of those really calculating racers didn't have it. And, you know, because you've done so much endurance racing, you know, maybe your level of self-control might be able to overcome the thing. Or is it just the thing once you get in the car?
It is.
You just become racing driver.
You either got it or you don't.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, I mean... Last year, I retired after 50 years of racing, right? So, started racing go-karts when I was young.
Keeps looking young, doesn't it? Jesus fucking Christ.
The joke is, I'm only 48, but I've been living my life so fast, I've actually unlapped myself a few times. So, but it's, I mean, I just, you just, as you get older, you get more calculating. but you're still, you know, because I mean, here's the reality. The last 20 years, I've had one-year contracts with options. So drove Ganassi for the majority of that, drove 14 years with Chip. Until, you know, last year was still the winningest driver for Chip. Now Dixon is the winningest driver. And but those of us who know Chip, if you're not putting up the wins, you're out, man. I you know, he'll be straight up. I can't get sponsors. I can't get, you know, make this team continue to happen if you're not winning races. So we're winning championships. We're winning races. We're breaking records. Even way into my 50s, you know, I think the last race I won with Chip was, I think, in 2016, 15, maybe 2015. Mm-hmm. So you still had to get the job done. And so as an athlete, if you can get that far in your career, you're, you know, again, you're blessed to get that far and still have all that success.
Are the modern cars more friendly towards older drivers with power steering?
No. No? Yeah. But there, I mean, the stuff that we drove, again, I mean, the stuff into the 90s, no power steering, the Indy cars were crazy fast. Yeah. You know, in the 80s, you didn't have power steering either. They all had their own technique. I'd say the common thing with all of them, they're just friggin' hot to drive. Yeah. All of them. I mean, the temperature inside the car, even as I was finishing my career, I mean, it's like 100 and, you know, I mean, it's not uncommon to be 115 to 120, and you got all your underwear on, yeah, and your multi-layer suit, and your helmet, and your gloves, and you're, you know, working your butt off in the car for hours.
If you're lucky, you get that air conditioned seat. That feels
that
great.
What?
The air conditioned seat.
What was that?
Maybe that's
why I've read about it.
Maybe that's why the M6s are so big. They put air conditioning in the seat.
The helmet blower I've only used once, but that was very, very nice. But it can't overcome 130 degrees. But at least
it's
from the neck up,
crazy
you're only
hot.
90.
It's just crazy hot. You know, when I did NASCAR, that was when you could still test. So there was, this was 2000. I was driving for Tide, new team. So we're testing all the time. So you finish a race. Maybe that night you actually fly to a test. There was a 3-month period. I was not home 24 hours. And I just had a newborn at home. I had a 2-year-old. I had an 8-year-old. And you sweat all the time. Mm-hmm. You couldn't even put your hand on the seat. That's how hot the inside of the car was. And then I joked. I go, you know what? Even if I look at a NASCAR now, I just start sweating.
Well, I bet.
Because you just sweat all the time. And
Has it gotten easier, ignoring cool shirts and those kinds of things, but just now that we know more about, like,
yeah,
science, nutrition, and hydration, does that make it easier to function in a car for that long?
And the nice thing is the teams and organizations have put a lot more focus on getting the cars cooler, because it used to be the exhaust came right under, like when talking about those really hot cars, the exhaust came out right underneath you. Now everything goes to the other side. They're doing a lot more insulation with the cars.
The
some
side
really
exit
stuff.
Exhaust right below the driver's door. Yeah,
right. Yeah. I mean, it was crazy. So
there must have been some kind of science behind that.
Yeah, a little bit.
Actually, it probably was. It probably pointed the exhaust away from, like, sound meters at Laguna or something.
Yeah. No, they were worried about the car rolling over because it always was rolling towards the outside of the track.
Corner, right.
So they dumped it off the inside.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So that was the whole reasoning for it. And then they could learn how to package it better and some other stuff. So yeah.
There's all kinds of clever stuff with just, like, the aero working off of the exhaust, isn't there? I was talking to Parker Kligerman once because we could shoot a TV show with him.
Yeah.
And he really, like, taught me about how much crazy nuance there is in how the cars are set up, even to, like, which side the exhaust exits on. It's crazy.
That has all come about in the last 10 to 15 years. Okay. A lot of work's done in wind tunnels and so
CFD,
on.
CFD, all that stuff.
Exactly. So they've learned how to take advantage of, I mean, you look at the fender wells, you look at how the wheels spin
the
inside,
like,
there, all those
aero.
They're not as bad as they used to be. You used to look at a car going,
oh, was it really janky?
Oh,
before?
My gosh. Because, I mean, it just kind of fit in. You know, they just had some simple. Where NASCAR now, they actually laser everything instead of days gone by. You just, as long as it fit the templates at those particular parts, those
Holden
areas.
Moody is like, filing
close
shit.
Close enough. Mm-hmm. Close enough.
Does it fit in the garage? All right, next.
There you go. The So I was fortunate. So getting back to it. So, you know, that was a big thing. You're talking about that racer thing. So that was a big thing for me. Racing 50 years. I love that adrenaline fix. So transitioning now to be an ambassador for Lexus has been great. So performance driving schools. I've been testing a lot of new prototype product coming, like the new convertible that the
LC convertible.
Yep.
I'm a big
great
LC
car.
Fan.
Fun car.
LC rules.
So gorgeous.
Four
car.
Really nice car.
A lot of fun. And so now I still get my adrenaline fix. I'm having fun. Don't have the pressure. Like,
you get
like
that
I used to.
You get that LFA once in a while, that like 80,000 mile LFA?
I've got.
Pull that thing out?
I've got about 30,000 miles in six different LFAs because I did the launch for them.
Yeah.
So launch it here in North America as well as Australia and had a lot of fun doing
it. You
that.
Coached me in it at the launch.
I thought you were coaching me.
Yeah. No, I beat your autocross benchmark in a GSF sport, though, and then you came back like an hour later and took it back.
Well, we're neck and neck, man. We're not competitive. That's a good thing.
No, I know, right? No one gives a shit until they put a fucking, until they put a whiteboard and put 36.8.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And then it becomes a big thing.
Yeah.
What, have you ever driven a race car in the past that was just like terrible and undrivable and you spent the whole time trying to like not die and get it home?
More than I would admit.
Really?
I mean, there were so many bad race cars I've driven. I mean, one of those was it's called the Maxim.
Mm-hmm.
So this was, you remember the old Ford Ford the Mustang Probe.
Yeah.
So this was the next generation of the Probe.
Okay, and the round Probe, maybe?
Well, it was after that.
Okay.
We raced it in 87, and the car was just horrible. It was horrible to drive, horrible to be around, horrible to, you know, get into. The next would be...
Front-wheel drive car?
No, it was rear-wheel.
Oh, okay.
So it was a prototype. You know, mid-engine. It was actually sponsored at that time by Apicon. It was a company.
I don't even know what that
short.
Is.
Yeah. And it was terrible. And actually, it was so bad at one race that, I mean, it's all carbon fiber, but the shock tower went straight up, broke. The whole thing just went straight up, and I went
punched
whistling off the track. And
oh, no.
I was not disappointed at all to crash that car.
Where was Carbon Tech at that point? Like,
it was just coming on. So Probe, the Mustang Probe was kind of one of the first ones. They did a little bit with the, you remember the front engine Mustang GTP car? So it came out in the early 80s, 83, 84. Ford Electronics was involved with that. They were bringing some carbon stuff on board. And then, you know, one of the other horrible cars I drove was an all-carbon car built by True Sports, which was an Indy car, and that would have been 92. And 91, the car was fantastic. It was absolutely a spectacular car, all-carbon, great car. The next generation, they just missed it. And so we spent the whole season driving this car that was just a piece of
crap.
So
it was a completely different car from the year before.
Exactly.
Oh, man. So they had it. They changed the rules for a new car or whatever.
Yeah, there's that thing right there. The Budweiser
one?
Car.
Right.
That's it. That was not. That one was really good. The number 11.
I was going to say,
that's
a shame because it's
fantastic.
Actually quite pretty.
And then the white and red one. Was
because they dropped the Weiser and just went straight to the Bug. That's like the new Coke. It's really bad timing.
So that car was
a bad engine,
So it was one of those things
where
I caught the blame for all that. You know, just couldn't drive the car. And then I don't know if you remember, but Bobby Rahal took over the program, and was going to make it good. And he came away, didn't qualify for Indy, came away and just said,
he went, "Yeah, the car's shit."
Okay, Pruitt was right. This thing was a piece of crap.
Is that you in that picture?
That is me. That's just a couple years ago.
Honestly, you look you're like a mirror image for Ayrton Senna in that picture. Go back to pull that picture up again. You really look like Senna right there, especially with that with the helmet, with that color, with the bright
yellow
helmet.
Actually, his and my birthday are really close to each other.
Really?
Yeah. I think he's on March 24th. I think he's 26th or something.
I'm a big Senna fan.
Raced with him over in go-karts at the World Championships.
Get out of
no
here.
Way.
Yeah. Yeah.
What year?
In Italy. It's a good question. 70s.
You still race go-karts?
No, I don't. I go and play in them from time to time. You know, one of my sponsors was Margay, and they helped me from early on, and still just big fans of those guys, just good people. Keith Freeber and his dad, Don, just you know,
I really
want to
do
just
go,
great.
Do some go-kart
it's fun
racing,
stuff, man.
Oh, we had these motorcycle guys from like Motorcyclist Magazine mm-hmm. here the other last week, and they're trying to get me to come do like a mini bike race. It's a 24-hour enduro on like 125 cc mini bikes.
Oh, I think Jesse Combs did that last
year.
Do they have any suspension or are they hard?
They have suspension. Okay. They're not fully hard. Yeah. It seems like a really good time. I think it's like at Adams or Willows. It's at the Willow Springs Willow Springs car track or Cal Speedway car track. I don't know, one of those car tracks. But
any alcohol going to be involved?
I hope not, man. You know, I really like going to the simulator and having a couple drinks and having a nice little drunk virtual race.
That's funny.
You're a big sim guy, right?
Big sim guy.
Recreational practice, both?
Well, more was just for my craft. Mm-hmm. Started doing it kind of before it was a thing, probably about 15 years ago. Developed some of my own stuff with a guy down in Sonoma. And it was a non-moving because you'd fall. You couldn't stay immersed if it was making the incorrect movements.
Right.
And then did a bunch of study with Ford Motor Company. They sent me all around the world doing a lot of these different programs, driving all these different sims. Been on one of the best ones out there right now that I've been on is Toyota Sim. TRD has one in North Carolina. Really great
for
piece
the racing
of
drivers
for racing. So, and it's
what is that into what makes it the best?
Well, you're only going to get as good a data out of the system as you put in. So they model everything. I mean, you got to model all the suspension, all the aero, all the torque, all the horsepower of the engines, every piece and part on that car. You have to, even down to the tires, you have to model the tires. So they work together with whatever tire manufacturer it is to get the right tires. And then they continually develop racetrack to sim, sim to racetrack to sim, you know, and so on. So there's two ways to look at a sim. One, you're looking at, I mean, the reality is, very limited amount of testing these days. Well, I don't care if it's Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR, sports cars, everything, very limited on testing. So
is
how are you going
to
get that?
Keep the costs down.
Keep
the costs
down. Yeah. And the other thing is, so that is an outlet for that, and that's ongoing and continually moving forward to get better and better from what we learned at the sim to the reality of getting better at the racetrack. And then the other component that is great is if you're going to someplace that you've never been before. A perfect example is Long Beach, right?
A place that doesn't exist
except one time a year.
Yeah.
So now you can go as a driver, you can go, which, you know, in days gone by, since I grew up in an era before Sims, I mean, there was a part where you just had to balls it up and lay them down. Because
just go in the middle of the night and just mob it in a rental car. You could do that, too.
They wouldn't let you get away with that too often. Especially in Long Beach, too many cops. But you just
have
to balls it up.
We've all seen Gone in 60 Seconds, sir. We know.
That's real world.
I'm building this
I saw Talladega Nights, man.
I'm building this parking garage, and I have people who are emailing me going, dude, why are you like making video, like showing where it is? Like, by the way, I'm trying to drum up business, you know? And they're like, people are going to like Gone in 60 Seconds this. And I'm like, homie, that was a film. Like, why are you fucking serious?
it was a movie.
Yeah, we're in LA, but where movies are real.
I love that stuff, man. It's you got those classics, right? Gone in 60 Seconds, Grand Prix.
Original or remake?
Original.
Yeah.
You can't beat the original. I mean, it's just for the time when it came out, what they did, how they did it was just, and Grand Prix and Le Mans. I mean, and you had these guys like, you know, Steve McQueen and Paul Newman and that were just so passionate about racing. Paul Newman was a friend, and he, when you talk to him, I mean,
you probably raced against him quite a bit,
absolutely.
Right?
Yep.
So I like to race against Paul Newman.
He's a great guy.
He's fucking 30 years older than you are. Like didn't he win a race at 86 or something at Lime Rock? Yeah. I think he won his last race.
At Daytona.
Was it Jesus?
Yeah. He came into the game a little bit late, but he put the work in, right?
But he did. You know, when you see these guys that have done, I shouldn't say see these guys, but see that caliber of an actor or actress, but actor specifically, because when you look at McQueen and you look at Paul, I didn't know Steve, but I did know Paul, that the passion for doing it was crazy. You sit and talk. I mean, he didn't want to talk anything about film. He just wanted to talk about racing.
That is not surprising at all.
He loved
I knew
that
Paul
stuff.
Walker a little bit, and he—I mean, he was not to the level of competition that Paul Newman was, but I would see him at track days, and I would see him, and all he ever wanted to talk about was cars. He couldn't have cared about the movies. It was interesting.
That's
but
cool.
Like when you. If you're on a track with Paul, you know what I mean? Is it like, listen, if I put him in the wall, this is going to be bad.
Not a second thought.
You don't want to be the guy that kills Paul Newman.
Well,
MGM calls you and they're like, hey, it would be a very nice idea for you not to put him in the wall.
Not to do that? Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Do you still live at is that your address?
It's funny how that is because if you're going to be one of those guys, you got to be willing to throw down on anybody at any time. I mean, I wouldn't say that all this driving I've done over the years has been as clean as it could be, but I'm racing guys who did the same thing.
Everyone says the same
thing.
That's
what you do.
Yeah, that's
fine. You get away with what you get away with. And if they call you on it, then fair enough.
Yeah. I might. That's why I don't have the thing, because I would take a second thought maybe before pit maneuvering Paul Newman in turn one.
Well, put it this way. He would do the same thing to you.
I'm sure he would.
Without a doubt.
Well, that's why I'm not a racing driver, because I don't have that. If you're like, I'll take out Paul Newman. Who's he?
And this is no disrespect to Paul Newman fans out there.
No. It's a race. That's a race.
But that's what he...
That's
and he'd
race.
Want you to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't want you to give him anything. He
of
wanted
course.
You race him
I'm
like
sure
a competitor.
Didn't. No. Yeah. I don't... For if there's someone out there that for some reason thinks I'm special, I don't really want the special treatment either. Yeah. But if I get it, I'm going to say no. Did you win that?
So this is one of one. This is...
does it say Rolex 24-hour winner?
Well,
on
the back? I've got I've been very fortunate over the years, so
we're talking about Scott's Rolex Daytona.
Rolexes. I have about 13, 14 Rolex Daytonas I've won.
So 13, if you look on 14 that you've won?
Yeah. And so
man.
And there's not many of those. So if you look on the back of that one, that is one of one. So that is, I was the, so at Daytona this year, I was the Grand Marshal. So for that, they do a watch for the Grand Marshal. And Rolex is, one, it's such a great company. And it's been so much fun to win all these watches over the years.
We call this the hard way. Getting one like that is getting one the hard way.
Yeah. It's
the rest of us have to buy them.
Right. And then Daytona is so appropriate. But, you know, there's everybody who goes to Daytona. And, I mean, you could talk about a lot of things. It's all about the watch. I can tell you, they want to win.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough. So in class, I've won it 10 times. And then in class, I've won
it. You get one for a class win, right?
So you get one for a class win. Uh-huh. And
you
then
get one for an overall win.
And then you also get one for an overall. And then they sponsored the championship 6 years. So and five of the 6 years, I won a championship.
Woo!
So,
my man.
Whoa.
I got a couple.
That's a lot of watches.
Yeah.
That's cool. Very good.
What's the hottest combo they gave you?
Well, you know, it's interesting because so this is the white face and the ceramic. So this
That's
is their
very,
brand new Daytona.
Very wearable. That's a good one for every day.
And then I got to tell you, even back, it's been interesting because I've won all these Daytonas. They've changed just randomly white face and black face.
Yeah.
So I have a number of white faces and black faces.
My friend Lee Keen has two as well.
Yeah.
And they gave him some really weird combos. Like they might
oh,
have
really?
Like found him in the back somewhere like engrave this one. I don't know.
Yeah.
like a gold with a chocolate dial. It's like where did they even find this?
It's and
13
so,
though?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
I like that you're wearing.
So with that, you know, now when each of my, so I have three kids. So each time, so I've given two away. Each time one of my kids turns 21, I let them choose one of my Rolexes.
They get one?
They get one.
You let them choose?
I let them
choose.
That
is, wow. Look at you. That's generous. Have you ever won one and been like, listen, I got 13 Daytonas. Like, how about a GMT? Like, GMT's nice. Like, can I get that Sea Dweller maybe? Like, that's pretty cool.
It's such a great heirloom. You know, I want to give my kids something that they remember forever. So when they turned 18, I gave each of my kids one of my qualifying rings for the Indy 500. So it has your name on it, and then it has your speed. So
really?
I gave them,
oh, that's rad.
And then...
Does it look really cool? Or is
it looks
just
really
kind of
cool.
A, can you
oh,
pull
no,
up a picture
really cool.
of an Indy qualifying ring? Do they all look the same, or do they change them up like
no,
every
they're
year?
No, they're all the same. So they're all gold and with a green stone in them, and they have your name on them, and then they're engraved on the outside.
Oh, yeah, there's some pictures of some hand. Is that it right? That looks like a Super Bowl ring. Oh, no, wow, look at
that's,
that.
No.
That's
a fan that's not ring.
It'll have a green stone in it, just being started.
Exactly. That's interesting. So you get it for qualifying for on qualifying. Pole or just for qualifying?
Just for qualifying. Okay, just make it in the race, So which is a
I
very cool thing.
I love that they make here we go. I love that they still make you do that.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Oh,
right
it does, look Super Bowl ring-ish.
Yeah.
That's so did the speeds, and then
speed. Did the speeds go up on your rings as the years went by, or did they ever go back down again?
No, like, they just kept going up.
Gee,
wow. They just kept going up. And now, that, you know, obviously they've backed down from where they were at one point in time. But
aside from a Rolex Daytona, what is the coolest thing you've won racing?
Wow. That's a really good question, actually. There's a lot of... I would have to say... When you win the Rolex Daytona, you get this, you know, huge pyramid trophy. It's green and it's like, I don't know, 2 feet by 2 feet by 2.5 feet tall.
That's big.
It's really
big
cool.
Trophy. You got to buy that a plane ticket home.
Yeah. And then winning the Michigan 500, beautiful trophy. It's got kind of wings off the side of it. It's a big cup. About that big.
Do you have a trophy room?
Only as many as my wife will let me bring in the house. So I got my office, and I have all the really special trophies. And I mean, I've been doing this 50 years.
Yeah, yeah.
So
I got a lot of. You're allowed to have trophies. I'm not trying to make fun of you.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the ones you'd win at Daytona, and then there's an actual pyramid.
That's
that
nice.
You'd
that's
have
classy.
As well.
That's your traditional, you know,
just cool stuff.
Sterling silver cup on top of a pedestal. I like when they give you like something crystal. I like when it's a
crystal's
crystal.
Great. We raced in Canada, and they'd give us these beautiful. There you go.
Oh
right
wow!
There.
Look at the it's that's called an obelisk.
That's a mini.
That's an obelisk.
Oh, that's a mini.
That's a mini.
That's
so, but
such a dope trophy. Huge. That's a dope. What you got to do is then you sit the watch on top of it, right?
There you go. Yeah, let it hang at the top.
Hell yeah.
Uh-huh.
That's great. I'm glad that the trophy game is very strong.
It's cool. So anyway, in Canada, they would give you this carved rock of a bear, you know, like of a polar bear or something.
Of course.
You know, it's really so. There's some cool stuff you've gotten over the years. We raced down in Australia, one down there. Big old massive crystal cups and, you know, really
in
cool
Australia,
stuff.
In Australia, the trophy's like 300 pounds.
That's right.
Here you go, Mike.
Yeah. You got to buy a seat for it on the way home.
We drink out of this. Was that at like Bathurst or one of those kinds of places?
No, we raced in Surfers Paradise, Indy Cars.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So we went down there numerous years. Always had a lot of success. Always, it was like I got fifth, fourth, third, second, first consecutively.
What about... things that you've raced that aren't cars? You ever like raced boats or any of that kind of stuff? Like really oddball stuff?
Did a little bit of single seat off road. It was really dirty. Raced up in Marysville and a few other areas. I mean, because California you got you know a lot of deserts, Nevada, a lot of places you can go race those. Sponsored by Baja Boats many, many, many years ago. Didn't actually do some racing. We did some kind of fun racing where we had a big offshore cat with two big diesels in it.
Those things are... You need a pair for those.
Yeah, crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy.
100 miles an hour on water.
Yeah, no.
Really...
We did it, but... That was like.
I'm glad you feel
that. Sign me up.
I'm glad you feel that way too. I'm glad it's not just me.
It's so hard.
Me,
it's like
so bummed.
It's like this wood table is what you. It's like the waves feel like this wood table. It's like
it's amazing because your other racing was like 240 miles an hour.
Yeah,
and you're like, yeah, you know, that's where we could go
no
faster if we could. And this is 100 miles an hour, but on water, totally different ballgame.
Totally different ballgame.
Tracks are very smooth, Zach.
No, I've been in a boat at like 80, and it's just I think people, anyone looking from the outside who's never been in a boat going at any kind of speed, you just go, oh, well, no, 100, that's only 100. And like the feeling is totally different.
It is totally different.
And the consequence, you can't slide out really, right? Like if the boat hits a big wave or gets weird, There's no like, oh, catch your drift. It just kind of tumbles and flies.
And so, some of the fun things have been, so being involved with different sponsors over the years, when I was involved with Budweiser, they were heavily involved with Chip Hanauer.
Mm-hmm.
So talking to him and talking about some of his, you know, because that was, you know, turbine-powered, serious hydroplane.
Those are like the drag hydroplane things, right?
They raced them.
Yeah.
I mean, but it wasn't drag racing, but they were,
Yeah. They also drag race them, though, I believe,
they do,
as well.
Which just is insane. So, and he talked about some of it. He said,
the first guy to build one of those things.
Wow, right?
Go, now, what we're going to do is get a real shallow hull. It's going to be real sketchy. Then we're going to get a big old jet engine, strap that motherfucker right on it. And then
I'm going to drive it.
I'm going to drive it. I'm drive it. And Budweiser going to pay for it.
I know, right? And if a fly lands on the water and causes a ripple, I'm going into the atmosphere.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just about.
Crazy.
Have they figured out the downforce on those yet to stop that?
Well, I mean, the stuff is, that's one thing I always loved about racing. It just pushes the envelope of, I don't know, there's a fine line between creativity and stupidity, I think, because some of the stuff you do is a big payoff, and some of the stuff you do is like, you look back now going, what the were we thinking?
Yeah. What did you do that would fit under that?
Oh, just about everything. You just push that envelope all the time. I mean, there's so many things you try to get away with. We went to, you know, one race where, you know, bolting this big old wing on the front of a on a prototype because there's no rule there that says you can't put a wing on it. And this is before we had wind tunnels and some other stuff.
And you were just
stuff.
Guessing at this?
Hmm?
Yeah.
Guessing. It's pretty good.
I did
aero. So when I was racing go-karts, we were doing, okay, let's build ourselves an underwing, built that. Oh, okay, I got to put a wing on it. So I'd have a buddy of mine, and I'm standing up in the back of my pickup, and I built a couple different wings, and I'm just holding them going, okay, what's the different angles of it? Oh, yeah, it's making some serious downforce. Okay, this one has this. It was all done by, you know, it was just playing in the back
of
the pickup.
That's so funny.
Whistling down the road at 70 miles an hour.
Did you ever see the movie?
Oh, the truck was moving.
Yeah.
I thought you were like setting up the car
before.
Did
you ever see a movie from the 80s with Matthew Modine called Wind, about sailing? Like about the America's Cup or whatever?
Yeah.
They're designing some new sail and they put a mast in the back of an old pickup truck and go out to like the Bonneville Salt Flats and are like sailing the truck around. It reminds me of that.
I mean, I'm standing up. I mean, I'm thinking, how am I going to test this thing? So I have my buddy. We all have our buddies, right? So he's driving a pickup. I said, we're all about 70 miles an hour and I'm just going to get up as high as I can and feel this thing, these things.
That's a good idea.
Different ones.
Did it work?
Yeah.
Did you get faster in the go-kart?
Yes, we did.
That's awesome.
Absolutely, man.
Cool. That's real cool.
Did you sell wings to other people?
Hell
later?
No. You got a competitive advantage.
How did that, was it like 3 feet high, like above your head? Where did the wing end up being?
It sat right behind you. So
right behind
it was one of those semi-lay-down go-karts.
Like those enduro-style cars?
It was kind of in between. Uh-huh. So it was a zip. So you had a 250cc race bike engine. So you had inline Rotax producing about 80, 90 horsepower. I forget
that's
what they
a lot
were
of
now.
Go-kart.
Maybe even 100 horsepower.
That's a lot of go-kart.
They'd run 150 miles an hour.
That's a lot.
It was pretty fast. At Daytona, we ran that fast. At Daytona, you took all that stuff out.
What?
You ran karts at Daytona?
Yeah.
The full circuit?
Yeah.
Oh, that rules.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
How long is that race? Is it like an enduro race or short?
Hour race.
How many laps do you do? Are you running like as fast as a car, pretty much?
You're running pretty dang fast. In those days, it was 150 down the back straight. It was pretty quick.
That's got to feel so different.
150 in a go-kart is crazy fast. Yeah. Do they have any suspension at all?
None. Zero. Zero.
They run the bus stop?
We did, actually, yeah.
Does 150 in a cart, kind of like the boat, feel more like 250 in a car because you're sitting
really
so low? No?
No, okay. It didn't. Yeah. Maybe because you are so. I mean, I think what's always interesting
you've been
is
around the same track in something faster.
Well, it's like when we go testing. So we go test at, let's say, Michigan, for instance, or Fontana. The first hour is like first couple laps. You're like, wow, this thing's really fast because you're rolling turn one 220, 230, but then hour into it, it's like, nah. You just roll. Okay, let's try this. Let's try that. Let's
try
this.
Your body just gets used to it.
You get used to that that speed.
I don't know. 150 in a go kart to me seems like an awful lot. It seems like very fast. But that do you appreciate street cars really anymore? Do you get any enjoyment? Like, do you go drive a Canyon ever? You go take a drive in a street car?
Well, we've done some, like, getting back to Lexus. We've done what's been fun is I've you know, starting to do some of this testing with prototypes. So, you know, the LC convertible's coming. We're going to see a sneak peek of that at Pebble Beach here in a couple weeks. So doing some of the testing with that was really cool. So we did some up at the end. Was it Angeles Grade?
Angeles Crest.
Angeles Crest. Mm-hmm. So we did some testing up there. We took it out to Willow.
Are you doing like comparative driving with like the 6 Series and 911 and stuff like that?
No, at that it was more just feedback. What do I feel? What do I sense? What's it like? What's the steering? What's the brakes? What's the ride? What's the, you know, a lot of the, and not, it's not all about just hauling, just going out driving as fast as you can, especially for the convertible, is like you need to have a good refined ride, but also at the same time you want to have great performance. So
what
it's
I'm
trying
always
to blend those
is
together.
The you don't want the jiggliness with the convertible. That's what you're trying to get away from.
Exactly right. You got to work on that harmonic.
You got to have your elbow on the door and then your hand at the top of the A pillar, right?
Yeah.
And that triangle that you make needs to be pretty constant. You don't want to feel the jiggliness in that triangle.
And you want it to be quiet. That's the other. That's the other huge aspect of that. And that's, I mean, we can almost have this conversation.
It's a soft top?
It is a soft top,
Can you give me a picture of the LC500 convertible? I don't know if we've seen a picture of one with the roof closed.
Ah, good question.
What we want to really avoid a Maserati Gran Turismo situation. That could go terribly wrong. Where the Gran Turismo convertible looks so great with the top down, and it's a complete disaster with the top up.
Yeah, this looks good with
this
the top
looks
up,
good.
Too.
Have you seen it with the top up? I mean, you're allowed to say if you have. It's okay?
Yeah. I like it.
Does it maintain the angle of the hard top pretty much?
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I'm impressed with how it looks at the top down because I think a lot of convertibles.
Well, let me just tell you that we can have, it's quiet enough to have this kind of conversation at 80 miles an hour.
Great looking car with the top down. Yeah. It really looks nice.
It's going to be a great car for Lexus.
They've done well. I wonder if there's any trunk.
Is there any
trunk left?
Well, with the top down, a little. Trunk? With the top up more.
Hey, so. Can you get a rear seat delete in that?
I don't. That's a really good question.
I don't know if they'll do a rear seat delete, but I'd rather have, in a car like that, I'd much rather have a nice shelf behind the seats for a bag, you know, than a. It looks great with the top down.
Yeah,
though.
It keeps the lines really well.
Yeah. LC's rule. They have such a great road presence.
They do. It's a really nice car to drive.
And I mean, it's fun to drive fast too. Actually, for a heavy car, they scoot pretty good.
You wouldn't know it's that heavy.
Yeah.
You know, that was a brand new platform when they came out with it. It's got a lower CG and there's more weight between. If you notice, there's not much overhang off the rear or off the front.
Yeah, they push
so they
the
put
wheels
all
really
the
far out.
All the weight between. So the handling, great balance, great fun to drive. And it's been, you know, that's a really great car for Lexus. And the story, do you know the story about behind the LC?
I went on the press launch, and so I'm sure I was told.
So
but I don't. If you know it, let's hear it.
So you know it was first introduced at Detroit about four years ago.
Yeah, the concept. Yeah.
So it won the best concept of the show at Detroit. And then everybody said the car wouldn't be built. And if it was built, it wouldn't look like the concept. So Akio, being the enthusiast, I mean, he's a hardcore driver.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a car guy, which is awesome. And he felt, I mean, he took that personally. And he said, we're building that car. And the engineers are going, no, we can't build this car. And Akio said, yeah, we're building this car.
It looks very close to the red one there is the concept.
Yeah.
Second from the top left, is the concept. So they got pretty damn close.
It won. So it came back, I forget if it was a year or 2 years later, came back and won the best concept to production. Because it looks so close. Because you know how you see a lot of those concept cars and you're going, I want one of those. And then you see production going, wah, wah.
Well, we've been talking about it because the Corvette. That's the big story is the new Corvette.
Yeah.
And
Supra also.
And the Supra as well. But the Corvette, you know, there's a little bit of, I think, when they launch it on stage, the press, it's all Z51. It's got the nice wheels. It's all, you know, the sport suspension, all that. And then pictures start popping up of the base ones driving around with the little cheap wheels and the all-season tires and the big wheel gap because it sits higher on the base suspension. You go, oh, man, that doesn't look so exotic anymore.
Yeah.
So you want to, you know, when your production car looks like that, I mean, Zach and I had one of these for a TV thing we did, and we had a DB11 also.
Yeah.
And everyone there, it's not only was it faster around Spring Mountain, everybody there preferred it to drive.
Yep.
I drove it from, from Yosemite home. I drove it from Yosemite to Venice. Oh, the
best. Great car, right?
It's the best. And the GSF rules too.
That
GSF
I drive.
The under the radar.
That's what I drive.
That's the one GSF. I have actually.
Yeah. I got you know, I got three kids, nice having four doors and great balance. I mean, everybody
and that
loves 5 liter.
Really a sweetheart.
Yeah. Yep.
You can kind of feel, I think the relationship between like that engine and the torque converter they use and the gearbox, it's got a real motorsport feel to it.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
It is. I mean, when they, I mean, that's my favorite car. I mean, besides yeah. LFA,
yeah.
that is
Do
my
you own
second
an LFA?
Favorite. I wish.
Will they sell you one of those?
Well, you can't get them anymore. I mean, you can't find them.
Can you trade like five Rolexes? Like a couple, yeah. couple pyramids?
Hey, I got a few. Yeah. I got some of these I can trade. Yeah. That is one of those cars, and it was a
if
great
I
car
was
from
Lexus,
the start, man.
I would allow you to buy one of those super high mile cars if they have VIN numbers on them or whatever.
There is no super high. I mean, I think I've seen some with 30,000, 35,000.
No, one of the ones Lexus has. One of the ones you were driving, the yellow one
the
and
yellow
the black
one.
Yeah,
yeah,
the yellow one's got a zillion miles on it for an LFA.
It's one. So, you know, this is great. So they're saying, hey, Scott, we want you to come down to Homestead. We're doing this Lexus program. It's their new supercar. It's really top secret. There's only two of these cars in the world. One will be in Europe. One will be in the States. We're still developing some in Japan. We want you to give really fast rides, but you cannot hurt the car at all. Like, at all.
Yeah.
But we want you to drive really fast. So we go out, flew into Homestead. Go out, go around the track.
There's still a lot of wiggle room for you in there. What a regular dude thinks is really fast, and then what would cause you to break the car?
I drove it really fast. I drove it really fast.
Fast for you.
The engineer, unfortunately, he was killed later. But Naruse-san, he was uncomfortable with how I was driving. I go, you really don't want me to drive this? And he goes, okay, you can drive that fast. But I mean, we had zero problem. Like, yeah. I drove the crap out of these things. I mean, I literally 95% all the time. I'm shifting to limiter. I'm like on the gas. I'm like driving. I mean, tires and brakes and fuel. That's all we were putting on to things. And just ran and ran and ran and ran like you'd expect a Lexus.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the press came out like, oh, it's okay. Well, it's okay. And it sounds like gorgeous.
So the sound is
like
really
gorgeous.
Something. Yeah, yeah.
And now, you know, 5 years later, 7 years later, then all of a sudden, all the magazines and all the people are saying, wow, this is a really good car. This is a really good car. Yeah. It is a really good car.
Yeah. I had to go at that event for 5 minutes, and I was like, oh, yeah, I get this. This makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I'm giving rides at Long Beach for the Long Beach Grand Prix. We were down here one time. And
it's everything like the SLR McLaren is
crazy.
You know, it's quite special.
And you can drive it every day. I mean, that's the other thing. You just click it back into the normal mode. I mean, everybody would just love to drive that car. I mean, there's a lot of guys who bought them to drive every day.
Has anyone got more miles than that yellow one? I think that's probably the highest, right?
I know a few. I don't know the exact numbers, but I know a couple of these guys. They drive them all the time.
Yeah.
It's just like they're everyday drivers. It's what you'd expect from Lexus, right? Every day.
Yeah.
And so getting back to, so I spent some time in a Supra as well. So I've been
The
new Supra.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tuners,
pretty fun, huh?
Tuners are going to love this thing, man. They are going to go crazy
over this
thing.
B58 is a very tuner-friendly engine.
Yeah. You're going to see, how many turbos are you going to see on that thing?
Dude, three parts. downpipe, intercooler, exhaust, and a tune, and you're probably plus 100.
You're going to see serious numbers.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these tuners are going to get them, and you're going to see some fun look. I can hardly wait till SEMA this year.
You're going to see some crazy
Supras.
Yeah, the dollar cars are going to be flowing like the salmon of Capistrano. did you get sea time?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It's fun. It's a fun little, I was really impressed with, so it's a, you know, turbocharged, two-stage turbo. I was very impressed with the pickup. I was expecting to have a little more turbo lag than
no,
it did.
It's fast.
It's really sharp. great balance. This was also a pretty big initiative for Akio, so, it needed to be right. It's a fun car. It's just a fun car.
Yeah. It's a little BMW-y.
It is very BMW-y.
Yeah. But
you know,
whatever. Not so bad.
It's not. Well, here's the reality. Is we would never have seen Supra again if it wasn't for the relationship with BMW. That's just reality.
I think that's fair.
So BMW has their fun car. Supra's back, which I think is going to be fun. And then when we see what the tuners do, the tuners are going to do crazy stuff with Supra that they would never do with BMW. Mm-hmm. We're going to see some crazy cars.
I've driven a couple, the 335s, that Turbo 6. There's a lot of people out there having a lot of fun with that.
Yes.
If you come out to the like the runway races, mm-hmm. it's like the rich guy runway. You don't even know about this shit because you do real racing. You don't even hear about what these plebes and their Veyrons do on the weekends. You know, these guys are running, some of these guys, you know, twin turbo Lambos doing 225 or 230 and a half miles.
Nice.
Nuts. Standing yeah. half mile, 225. Crazy. But there's very popular like 7-8 year old BMW 335s juiced up to like 500-550 horsepower, yeah. making like 175 mile an hour passes. Like, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's
175 is probably full mile. It's probably like more like 150 and a half, but still,
it's crazy.
It's a popular yeah. popular engine for tuners, more so than in the past, because when you start going turbos, everything gets easier from an aftermarket standpoint.
Yeah. So it's gonna be fun to see. It's gonna be I'm having fun with it. Next week I'm shooting a Supra commercial. So
oh, are you?
Yeah.
They're lending you downstream for that.
They're they're crossing me over a little bit, crossover where it makes sense, you know, for that car.
Are you precision driving for it, or are you like standing talking for it?
It's top secret. I don't know. They oh, okay. haven't even told me what.
Do you like?
I'll be driving.
You like? Of course. Yeah. Precision stunt driving stuff.
I do.
It's a fun gig, right?
It's, you know what? We were filming, like I said, I was filming down in Long Beach yesterday for Lexus, and here you are driving Ocean, and I'm, you know, you're off the back of a Pursuit, and, you know, when the Pursuit's with the camera arm.
Cayenne with the crane.
Yep. And so, and my proximity sensors are going off on the front because that's how close yeah. you are to
the
camera.
Is it like auto braking?
Oh no, but it's like beep 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 beep. You know, so
pull
it was
that fuse, homie.
It you got to remember to hit that button. That's very
yeah.
true.
There you go, right there. So you're on the camera.
I'll tell you,
I got another great
any
story.
Any day
for
when you're getting to drive like around one of those is a pretty fun.
It's fun
day
stuff.
At work. I got
so
to do that cool. at Dirtfish, and the Cayenne was on dirt too, so it was like sliding around. It was a mess.
So okay, I got it. You know how things crazy happen? So leave that up just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So so you look how big that camera arm is, right? How big and how massive and how bulky that is. So now, if you get a chance, pull up the RCF Track Edition. So the Track Edition comes into the U.S., top secret. Nobody knows nothing about it. We're down. Michelin was kind enough to let us use their test facility. We went down there to do a bunch of preview work. So, you know, on Twitter, we launched some stuff. In fact, if you ever get a chance.
Is that not a thermal? I thought you were a thermal.
I think it was thermal. No. Oh. It wasn't? Oh, nope. It looked like thermal.
It really looked like thermal.
That may not be the track, but where we did all the initial testing in a prototype was at the Michelin test facility.
Oh, I was thinking about the commercial. The commercial is a thermal,
so,
I think, right?
Well, they did. So we did two things. We did commercial there. No, there's been a couple commercials. The first was a tease, and then there was a commercial, and that may have been just on social.
Okay.
So
okay.
All the initial stuff. If guys follow Twitter, I'm Scott Pruitt 01, and I post a lot of this stuff all the time. And so we are doing this, one shot where you come head on with each other, and the camera's facing you like center driver, and then they raise it up and you go underneath it, and no harm, no
foul.
Fairly
common shot.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
So we're doing that. We did the first one. Now this is a prototype, right?
See,
there's only one in country. So the first one, yeah, no problem. Second one, yeah, it was okay. And then the third one, the camera operator just didn't get the arm up fast enough.
Oh, boy.
And so I'm going, holy crap. And all of a sudden, man, I just yanked the thing to the right, and it hit the A-pillar and tore up the A-pillar, broke the quarter glass, tore up the side fender, tore up down the side, and I'm like,
oh, no.
This is like,
broke a camera.
Did you break the camera or the camera
didn't
head?
Didn't break the camera.
No way.
Didn't break the camera. I mean, we caught the arm, not the camera.
Both arm is not inexpensive either.
Prototype,
not
your
fault.
This was like the third shot of the morning.
We're going to shoot it from the left side for the rest of the day.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to shoot the right side.
Yeah.
The windshield didn't break. It was, but that's a fun car
to
drive.
Wait, so
look,
every photo from the shoot is on the right side. No, that sucks. Yeah, if the guy's sleeping at the arm, that's no bueno.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes I think, yeah.
And he just said, my bad, man. My bad.
Yeah, shit happens.
It happens. But it always happens with a prototype and, you know, first or second shot of the day.
I mean, look, you got 13 Rolexes, homie. You don't got to prove nothing to nobody.
Remember,
we were
filming at Chuck Wallow. This is in 20, I don't know, 10, 6 years ago or something for this big drive shoot. And one of the camera car companies was chasing Harris. Harris was driving a new M5. And they both went over the same corner, which was like uphill right-hander off camber. So you have like weight, you know, weight.
I know exactly where that's at.
You know the whole thing, right?
You know, at the end of the straight on Chuck Wallow, you're running clockwise.
Okay.
It's counterclockwise.
Left,
excuse me.
Up past the corner worker station, all that stuff. So you unweight and you're off camber. And they come in. We're all in the pits, but they come in just laughing and they start shaking hands and they're doing that face where everyone's like, that was some shit. Oh boy. And we're like, what happened? And the arm was over the left side, in the direction of the weight, and the car started to tilt on two wheels. And
the Cayenne did.
And the guy operating the arm was quick and smart and swung it to the right and brought the wheels back down. And they showed us the footage, and you could see the horizon start to tilt.
Yeah.
So like they all went in. They just got excited. They went in hot. And they almost rolled it. But the guy on the sticks was quick, and that's how quick the arm was. And you could swing it over and pull the weight back.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. That was a good day right there. Could have been a really bad day.
Were earned on that day. Get in the super chat. We're going to go there in 5 minutes. And if you want to get in, do we have a lot, Zach? What do we have? We have a bunch. People ask us questions. No, a great light day.
Oh, yeah.
People, that seems odd. It seemed like there were more.
I'll refresh.
Oh wow!
There we go.
People ask us questions because we're live on the internet.
Ah, so I like that.
Before we go there, though, I don't know actually if it was in my own head or if it came out of my mouth. Do you have any personal attachment to individual vehicles, or do you only see them as tools for your job? And if so, do you own any cars, or have you owned any cars that were particularly special to you?
So I'm more of an old school guy. So I got a 55 Chevy Pro Street. I got a 67 VW van, all redone, four-wheel disc brakes.
I didn't expect either of these. I have
I got a 60 Caddy convertible. Oh, I put it on bags, so it's right on the ground.
That's lovely.
I got...
Was that your van?
That is my van, there.
That's a great van.
That is a perfect van.
That's the Steelies, dude.
Those are actually all customs. They're actually forged wheels, and then we put three pins on them so we could put the hubcaps on them.
Like Detroit Steels or something like that, or one of those guys?
This was done by... I forget who did those. But yeah, so it's a Porsche leather interior. It's got a 2300 cc engine in it. It's like I said, four-wheel disc brakes, so it actually goes, you know, so it's not like a typical van.
What's the interior configuration?
It is a bench seat, two bench seats, and then all wood across the back.
Rad.
I like those wheels. It's kind of like a throwback to white walls, but without being white walls.
Yeah,
that's cool.
And it's painted the same color as the upper part of the car.
Yeah, that's real cool.
So that's a fun, fun ride, man.
Is that on bags too, or is that just
it's on bags too?
Oh, it is.
Yeah,
two cars on bags. I love where you're
at. Well, my pickup, my Pro Street's on bags.
Oh, you got three cars on bags.
Yeah.
Do other cars on bags, or is it just those
well?
Three?
I mean, the thing is, you can have that thing right on the ground, and it looks awesome. So,
is that your collection? Those three?
I also got my. So I have my championship Trans Am car from 94.
Cool.
The Royal Oak. It was Royal Oak charcoal.
Did you buy it or
were you given it? So I was given the body as it came off the car after we won a championship. And then I just put that away. And then I had gone to the Monterey Historics for the first time because mostly it was a conflict weekend. And there you go. Royal Oak.
The yellow?
Great. Yeah. I mean, that's a great looking car.
Wow, it is a great looking car. Can we get a, can we punch in on that picture?
Long story short, I went to the Monterey Historics, got all excited about, wow, this is really cool. I got to see if I can find, find a chassis, start talking to people. And they said, well, I think we know where the chassis is at. Lo and behold, it was in a trailer outside of Longmont, Connecticut. I sent my the car chief at the time. I sent him there to check out the car, and he goes, "Yeah, Scott, that's the car.
That's a nice looking car too."
So it's all been redone.
So you
redone,
put it back together and
all done, it, all redone.
Does it work?
Yeah.
Do you ever drive it?
No.
Oh.
And it has an original spec. It was a 1 year only engine in it. I mean, it's a V8 Chevy, and it produces like 680 horsepower, 650 horsepower.
I bet it sounds amazing.
Awesome.
You can't drive. Sounds
can
awesome.
Can you go to track? Yeah, I could go to the track.
No, but is it eligible for historics?
Yeah, it would be.
You got to do it.
That's a really good question. I think,
What year is it? 93, 94?
94, yeah.
It's such
a great car.
Do you not want to track it just because it's like, one, you've had an
experience. I don't need to track it.
Right, yeah.
You know, to me, it's more the memory of it and having that car with the bodywork as it came off the track.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's got, in the back of it, it's got a big ding where somebody ran into me in a race and
that's
some
perfect.
Other stuff. So, yeah,
you
it's
gotta,
a great car.
You, as soon as that's eligible for historics, you got to bring it out. How do you know?
I might show
they
it off.
They don't crash into each other in historics like that.
It's true.
But they're old race cars. All that stuff's just old.
I know. Are you not that rich yet?
You
can't hang with
that? I see all the time, effort and energy when we're full time and you got, 15 guys working on a car and everything's nut and bolted and everything's timed out and everything. I do not want to bust my ass in an old race car. I've busted my ass enough. I'm done.
What if someone hires you to drive their old race car?
Nope.
That happened. No?
Mm-hmm. Nope. I'm not a historic guy.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I got to film a 962 that Porsche brought out to Chuck Walla, which was really cool. And Alan Springer tuned it for more fire, which was great.
Yeah,
because
great guy.
You could see the flame on the back straight from pit wall.
which car did you run?
It was restored to like pure white. It was just white with Porsche on the back. I could look it up. I don't remember because
my first prototype win was 1986 Columbus Dealers 500 with Bob Wallach, and we won in a 962. And I did a bunch of testing.
To drive one of those.
It was interesting because you had to use the clutch because it was a full synchro transmission, and they
pushed basically a street car transmission, pretty much.
No, it was a full race.
Okay,
and they all ran a spool, so none of them wanted to turn until later down the road. So it was sponsored by we were Bayside, and then I did a bunch of testing. Actually, I did a bunch of testing in mid '86 with Al Holbert. In the Löwenbräu car at Mid Ohio.
Oh, that's Löwenbräu car. That's why.
Because he wanted
me
to drive for him in '87, which, there's those things you look back on going, well, shoulda, coulda, woulda, but it was still, everything worked out great.
Löwenbräu car! You could drive that in historics. Right?
Right?
And see,
I'm trying old race cars.
I'm just trying to make you into
it. Amazing. So when we filmed this, Patrick Long drove it, and this is the one he drove.
Yeah.
And he was talking, it was much more comfortable to drive than the 917. And, tire technology at that time was different than it is now. Sizes were different than it is now. Have you how has that change been for you over 40 years with tire tech, like slicks to slicks even, is it a world difference? I mean, you guys are doing 230 back in the 80s on the tire tech they had then with big rubber and all that stuff.
Well, so also realized that I did all the testing and development for Firestone before they, when they came back to IndyCars. Mm-hmm. So I got like 30,000 test miles. And so I know a lot about tires, and it's been interesting to see. That's the common denominator with every car that there is.
Jesus.
And
sounds like a seizure over there.
What's
up? Wow. That was great.
And so, no matter how good a car you have, it's stuck to the ground by four patches of rubber about the size of your hand. And so that technology is huge. And so you have those great companies like Michelin and like Bridgestone, and when they, they can make or break car manufacturers. Mm-hmm. And you look at, some of the stuff we used to run on in, the '80s and then into the '90s, some of the stuff was really good, and some of it was not so good. And you know, probably some of the toughest stuff the most difficult was in NASCAR, because you got these big race cars on these really little narrow tires, and they're hard, and they, you know, from the start of a run to the end of a run, they could easily fall off 2 seconds. And it was just, I want to be one of those guys, I can just run and get faster and faster and faster. Mm-hmm. The fuel's burning off, and you're going faster. And so, you know, you run on Michelins or some of these other tires, and you are going faster. You run in Cup, and you're just like, drop. Anytime you come in and take new tires, everybody's in to take new tires. So it's been an interesting dynamic, feeling and learning and having to adapt all those different situations.
Oh, interesting.
But yes, they've changed a lot since the 80s.
It's amazing to me how power has come down in most racing series, even as tire tech has advanced. Like, right. It's this strange thing where, like, hey, shouldn't we have done this backwards?
Right.
But it's easier to add horsepower than it is to, like, change the composition of rubber.
Right. And it's like everything else. I mean, when you look back now, I mean, you know, I look back into the, you know, 70s, like with Parnelli Jones and Dan Gurney and those guys. I mean, one Dan Gurney hero, probably for me personally, the guy that I would just hope to emulate a little of, because he's done all these things, and I've been fortunate to do almost all those things, except race Formula One. And you look at the era, you know, the 60s and 70s, wow.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
They killed guys. I mean, that was the deal. I mean, you talk to,
that
you know,
documentary,
Folamer.
You've seen it.
Yeah.
It just goes through the safety and all the people they lost, and it's
crazy.
Brutal. Yeah, it's
crazy.
Wild.
Same. And so it's unfortunate that you have to have bad crashes and bad circumstances to move forward, and that's what we have. And that, you know, whether it's the tire industry and even racing against, so in 2000, here we are, you know, the late 90s, starting to work on some of the Han stuff, the more functional Han stuff.
Yeah, that new what's the dealio for the Hans for cars with 3-point belts?
Oh,
the
yeah.
Simpson Hybrid, is that what it's called? The hybrid thing?
The hybrid.
Yeah,
the
yeah.
Car and driver guys. Well, I mean, I think all the journalists do them for, like,
yeah.
P. Cody and the Lightning Lap and stuff.
Like, yeah. For, like, doing a track day in your normal car.
It's the best. You know, unfortunately, the big thing that drove that forward was when Dale Earnhardt Sr. crashed at Daytona. Because everybody was kind of like, yeah, it's coming along. I was using it. A few guys are using it, developing it. And then when that happened, it was a really bad day, but it was a really great day for racing, because I don't know of a race car driver now that would get into a car without the Hans.
Yeah.
Without question. Yeah. And, as you're saying, journalists and so on. I know everybody.
Well, it was, I don't know about everybody, but I remember Dale Earnhardt crashing. He was a hero of mine. My dad, for his job, which is not remotely related to racing, got to grand marshal the Atlanta Journal 500 in 1989, and I got to, as a little kid, meet Rusty and Dale and Bill Elliott, and like huge names, like rock stars at the time. And so when Dale, like, I, because I had just had like a 10 second interaction with Dale when he died, I was like completely heartbroken.
Yeah.
But I didn't learn about the Hans thing until later. By the time I was old enough to start doing track days.
Are you insinuating I'm old?
Yes. And I look older than you. But by the time I was old in my 20s and started doing track days, the Hans was already a known thing.
Okay.
It was so I don't really necessarily remember before.
Sure.
But now this sort of this hybrid deal where you're actually using a Hans-like device for even... It was always... Harnesses, Hans. Now they have something for street belts.
Point. It's, you know, it's such a great thing, and you know, so you know, when you look at, you know, this, I don't know, when you look at 50 years of racing for me, so I raced against all those guys. So I had this previous generation of racing against all the sports guy guys like Wallach and Haywood and Jochen Mass and all those guys. So I was a young kid racing against those guys. Moving into IndyCar, so the initial IndyCar guys, you know, so Ray Hall and Allanter Sr.,
Ari,
Vukovic, all those guys. And then, you know, when you win a championship, now you get invited to IROC. So now I'm racing with Dale Sr.
IROC, Did you drive Daytonas or did you drive Camaros?
It just depended.
Yeah.
You know, just every year it changed.
Every year it changed, right? What was your favorite IROC car? If you remember.
Yeah. Actually, I won the last ever IROC race at Riverside.
Really?
It was a NASCAR weekend, a race Saturday, and then they tore the track down. So,
were you in a Dodge Daytona IROC?
I think that was a Chevy. that was a Chevy Camaro. But we did Dodges and did Chevys and so on. So I got to meet all those guys.
I wish I was old enough to drive Riverside. A lot of guys come in here and talk about Riverside.
Great track.
And they never, you know, when did they tear it down? The 80s maybe?
Well, it had to be 89. Yeah. Yeah. At the end of the 88 season.
Is there a comparable track that you could say it's kind of like?
No.
No?
Not for me, no, because you had the sweeper at the end of the straight, which was just so fast. And then you can go up through the S's and you see those classic shots from NASCAR races, guys cutting straight through. Right. Yeah, so you just cut straight through. Guys are passing guys, and
these
just
S's look like VIR's S's a little bit. Actually, they look like running Sonomas upside down, like going running the other way up Sonomas.
That's
a pretty boss section, though.
It was awesome. And you could see that there's no reason you couldn't just cut straight through.
Shoot it straight.
Yeah. And the NASCAR races, they do that.
Yeah. Well, the rule is what? Two wheels on the pavement?
Well, it's NASCAR. It's exciting, right?
NASCAR
was always
road course,
crazy.
Very exciting. We filmed one last year, and Lee Keen drove it. And before he went out, we're asking Parker, we're like, how are these things on the road? He's like, oh, terrible. I'm like, why? He's like, well, you see how small the wheels are? Like, he's like, that's how much brake you can fit, but it's got to be this small.
Right.
You can't make it. Like, there's all these things about them that don't make sense for anything except oval racing.
Right.
But when it starts going around the track, no one cares. Lee had the most fun ever. Like, it's
crazy,
such an
right?
experience outside the car.
Or
inside the car.
Charlotte, Sonoma. In fact, I know the guys really dug Sonoma this year because they ran the long track. They've always ran the short NASCAR track. There's talk that they may do the long track at Riverside. Maybe not this year, but, you know,
not
coming
Riverside,
down. Watkins Glen.
Yeah,
That'd be
so
cool.
Yeah. And the guys will, all the NASCAR guys I know love that stuff. So you talk to, you know, Kurt Busch and Kyle and Jimmy, and, you know, those guys dig all that stuff.
Because they all, at least most of them, drive in some other discipline other parts of the year, like whether it's off-road or something.
Right.
Like, so they have crazy car control skills.
Yeah.
So it'd be cool to use them. And the viewer experience of those cars move around, they make noise, like, you know, V8 supercar, comparable, all that stuff. Be cool to watch.
It's good fun. Yeah. It's good fun stuff.
Let's blast through a few of our viewer questions if we've got. I'm not going to do Mustang versus Camaro today. I'm sorry, people. We're going to try and get questions that are. Do you want to do car advice? You want to give car advice?
Hi to my family at home.
Yeah,
that was amazing.
Is that okay?
That was an amazing.
Perfect.
Sign off.
Justin's got a watch class. Justin asked two questions.
Okay.
I'll get to his other one later about your focus. We're limited on time. Kermit Submariner. If I bought one, how much should I pay? $12,000 to $15,000, unless it's a weird four, and then up to 20. Are those green bezels?
No, blue.
Very nice. Blue? Oh, yours are white gold. Excuse me. That's the green bezel black dial is a Kermit.
Yeah.
They're worth good money right now.
They are worth... Here's the reality. Also being an ambassador for Rolex watch, I've learned a lot more about them.
Now?
So I've won more than anybody else. So they've been very kind to have me involved with the company. And I've learned so much about that company. So one, an orphan started it. Even in a time where people are wearing less watches, they are still having record sales. But a lot of it is that they're
an
heirloom.
Instagram.
So for a lot of people, they pass it down generation after generation after generation, which is a very cool thing. So I think any Rolex is as long as you're not overpaying on the front side, it's just going to continue to go up in value.
Friends don't let friends pay over sticker.
That's right.
Yeah.
Don't pay over sticker.
But Kermit's, there's a fixed number of them, so they're an investment
That's right.
rate at this point. But buy the best condition one you can find.
That's right.
Jerry says, what do you think is the answer to making F1 great again?
They need to get the budgets back in line. I mean, you got the haves and haves nots. I mean, when you're talking $500 million a year, it's a staggering amount of money. And you also have, you need to get the cars back
to
a point.
Didn't they just do that? I thought they just did that.
They're heading that direction.
To cap the budgets. Wasn't that a couple of years ago?
Yeah, but I think I remember the story for Red Bull. This could have been like 5 years ago, but the story was you can only spend, I think it was $125 million a year, or maybe $215 million
on development of the car. But the loophole was you can do whatever you want with like CFD and CAT design because you're not like designing the car and you're designing other systems. Basically, they found a way where they could have a separate entity that was like working on all the tech, but not like it wasn't called the car and the testing and the development and like the manufacturing of carbon fiber.
Got it.
So then you have $500 million.
So it's like open loophole, closed loophole. It's crazy.
So you got to bring the cost of going, just like in every other form of racing, you got to bring the cost of racing down. So then because the haves always will outbeat the have-nots. So you got more money, you're going to have more people, more time, more things, more stuff, more tools, more of everything. And unfortunately, when you see that, then you're going to have, you know, guys like, what, Mercedes up front and I mean, you know, Ferrari kind of goes up and down and Red Bull, you know, they're kind of hanging in there. But then you have kind of the rest. You know, unfortunately. So you got to bring it to an even playing field by bringing back the cost of going racing.
What do you think about, you know, the argument that the cars don't move enough, that they're glued to the ground because aero is just so perfect now? Like, obviously, right. That's the key. For a while, I guess it seems like racing's always about going as fast as possible no matter what. And they've got the cars to go really, really fast, but it makes the viewing experience a little bit, like, sterile, I guess, because the cars
are just
so
pointed. You could come back on that with tires. You know, if you get the tires harder, now, you know, the tire technology has moved. Pirelli's moved it to, you know, kind of a more aggressive position. You know, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, all of a sudden the rear tires look like steamrollers again, mm-hmm. you know, instead of being, because they were heading down that road. Remember, they had the grooves in them and they were doing some other stuff. You can manage some of the corner speeds that way and some of the aero that way as well. It's just there's that fine line where you'd love people, you know, reality. Formula One has never worked in North America. It hasn't. And well, I take that back. It's never really worked in the U.S. because we've had it in Vegas.
In Canada,
we've had
it
in Long Beach.
In Mexico, it works.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've had it in Austin and we've had it at Indianapolis and we've had it in all these different, you know, great cities where it should have worked. People, I can guarantee you, people in America, they love and are used to tough, tough, hard, close, aggressive racing, wheel to wheel, guys leaning on each other, the whole thing. And it just is never, as much as they continually have tried to make it work here in the States, it never has.
Your average like Friday night sprint race in like Louisiana is more entertaining than your average Formula One race.
I don't think it'll ever compete in that arena for like attention, and attention meaning like if you're into that entertainment, you might not drift over. But I'm hearing like Clarkson, Harris, I mean the people that we look up to, and they are not from America, and they're talking about the same problem. It seems like a lot of people that are from across the pond are also saying there's a viewership problem, there's an entertainment problem, a viewership problem, and a racing problem, which is like a steward issue and other things too.
Yeah, that whole everything. I mean, that's a whole different subject on the steward side.
Oh yeah,
I think that has just been insane to me. I mean, has like, are you kidding me? Really? Did they really make that call just now? I was like, what?
Can you boil all of it down to like, closer racing is better racing, and right now it's not so close.
People want to be entertained. Yeah. I mean, to be entertained, you got to have that. You know, you got to have that wheel to wheel, fender to fender, wing to wing. That hardcore. Mm-hmm. You know, to the last lap, they're just making out that over the last lap.
Yeah,
and they don't have that.
Yeah. I agree. Snuffles says, what do you guys see in the future for Lexus's performance line? Are the F cars competitive with other models now, or do they have a long way to go?
Absolutely competitive. And how do I know that? Because we do a lot of comparison testing, whether it's in Japan or here in the U.S. And I love the F. I love what we're doing with the F. We talked about GSF, RCF.
I'm really waiting for an ISF. Well, where's my ISF? What happened
to it? The vintage?
No, not the old ISF. I want a new ISF. Where's it at? What's going on?
That's
it's probably a hard market segment.
Here's why I know it's
doable.
Here's what it should be done with. It should be done with the Lotus Evora 400 engine, which is just the supercharged V6. Just put the Lotus supercharger and intercooler package on the V6. Boom. 420 horsepower. Done.
if it was up to me, okay, this is just up to me, period. Not to anything. I would love to see an F that had the normally aspirated V8.
Yeah.
Which is a great engine. You know, 5 liter, sounds great.
In the IS.
Great torque. Great, you know, just great stuff. And then I'd love to see electric motors on the front wheels.
Okay.
So you could generate this massive amount of performance with electric motors.
Yeah, on-demand all-wheel drive.
Have this crazy performance on the track. It would be an insane car.
That would be their 911 turbo kind of competitor NSX thing, which would be amazing. I think it'd be very cool.
It'd be really cool.
Would it be possible to combine the tech of the LC500 and the LC350H? Is that a 350H? I think it's a 350H.
Well, what they do is they take the technology from the P1 car in Europe, the Toyota, because they already have that tech.
Yeah.
You know, so they already know, because when you have two different electric motors on, you know, the right front, left front, it takes a different sort of programming within the control system to be able to get all that stuff where you, as a driver, you enjoy driving it. Mm-hmm. So if it's up to me, I think that would be a really awesome way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be crazy fast.
But tell them guys we need an ISF again. We're missing it.
You know what?
We really
it's coming.
Are.
Talk about a car that's coming back around as this cult thing.
Yeah.
The ISF that we launched 10 years ago.
Well, because look, C63s have head stud issues on the 6.2. Those E92 M3s have rod bearing issues. The virtue of a Lexus, if it's a second place in dynamics and it's third place in whatever, the virtue of a Lexus is that in 5 years it fucking works.
Yeah. I got 250,000 miles on it, and I just got to break it in.
A million. I have an LS400 with a million miles.
That's
on it.
That's awesome. I mean, it's
the engine's
but
never
they keep
been
on going, right?
Yeah.
And they go and they go and they go and they go.
Now, it's not to say that other things haven't broken. But yeah, like if you wanted to, and the next guy's question was about like used sports sedans, because he's coming to LA to attend LMU, which is right around the corner from us. And he's asking about C63s and M3s. I think you should look at ISFs.
ISF, second generation ISF.
Yeah.
You know, the first
the
was
2011 and up one. 2011 to 13 or something.
Yeah. Because we had redone there were some things we changed in the diff. There was a different shock package on it. You know, the first car was a good car. The second car was a generation above the first.
They were fun.
They were fun. Yeah. I mean, they were. That's another one of those cars where if I could find a good one, I'd buy it.
And even the new 350 F Sport is really nice.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a way to get the supercharger onto that engine. I'm sure there
is. Of course
there is. Somebody will figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I just had. Never mind. We'll come back to that.
And you should,
seriously. This won't air for a while other than the six live people. I had the Evora GT, which, and it's just, Lotuses are so great. The Evora range is so great.
Yeah.
They're fucking so, they're just the ease at which they do everything.
Yeah.
Is so nice. Let's see. I'm sorry, Peter. I appreciate your donation, but I'm not going to tell you who my customers are. M. Cornley 2 says, Scott, any advice for someone who's looking to move from the corporate world into the team management side of professional motorsports?
A motorsports suit. Sure. Here's the really cool thing. On a lot of levels, you can go to the racetrack, start meeting some people. A lot of the teams they're looking for good help. That'll get you in a door of getting an understanding of, is that something you really want to do?
If you were at the racetrack, at a team's hospitality trailer, there's people in branded shirts walking around, there's the guys working on the car, who do you ask for?
Team manager.
The team manager?
Team manager.
Yeah.
And a lot of, you know, you're not going to go to a Penske or a Ganassi or the high-level guys, because they have, you know, their full group all signed up, but you can go to some of the different lower level teams, not just in IndyCar, but say sports cars and maybe even in the the kind of the lower level series. A lot of it is just getting out there and seeing first, is that something you want to do? I mean, I think that you need to get out there and get some experience. Is that something that you can see yourself really getting out there and doing and wanting to do? And with the lower level teams, they do want the help. They could use the help. Yeah. So I think
that's a road gig, right?
It could be.
You're probably on the road, right?
Could be.
Road gigs are fun if you're young.
They're
a
lot of fun.
There's nothing like working on the road. That's the jam.
All I want to do when I was in my 20s, drive.
Yeah.
I could drive every day.
When you
care.
Hit 30, it's like home is nice. do we do John's, Matt, Zach, and Scott? Do you have a best or worst Uber story or other rideshare service? We don't need to single out Uber.
I have. I'm a Lyft guy, so I can tell you that every time I've used them, they've been great.
Are you an ambassador?
I haven't. I haven't had a bad story.
I've only got one, and that it's not even. Well, I probably have more than one. There's been some not so great driving and some not so great navigating, but that's standard. One, I got in a Prius, and I shit you not, the left rear hub was like hundreds of miles or tens of miles from seizing entirely.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, my God, please don't die. Please don't die. And I later told my wife about that situation. She was in the car with me, and she was like, and you didn't make him stop? And I was like, it was like 3 miles, and we were like in the city. And she was like, but you didn't make him stop? And I was like, I'd rather die than be rude in the back of an Uber.
He would have just left you on the side of the road somewhere, right?
I told him as we were getting out, and I was like, you need to get your car checked out immediately.
Yeah.
He was like, why? And I was like, because the hub was a couple miles from falling apart.
You know, when you turn right, there's that sound, and when you turn left, there's less of it. That's your wheel bearing.
That's giveaway.
That's what your wheel bearing is.
Giveaway.
I had a guy pull the e-brake once to slow down.
Fuck out of here.
Really?
Yeah, I was on my way to Castro Motorsport, and someone dived in front of him at an intersection, dove, and he jumps. He's like 23. He jumps on the brakes, and he reaches down. He pulls the handbrake. And then we keep driving. I'm like, hey, man, why'd you do that? And he goes, oh, it helps you slow down better. I'm like, okay.
Wow, that's smart.
So it's like 2 blocks.
That's the way it works,
out,
right?
And then I wrote anonymous feedback, but I was like, hey, man, I know you're into driving. I can tell, but here's how this actually works. I didn't want to do it in the car, but it's like, you know, the weight goes forward, your stronger brakes being active are the ones in the front, like da da da. But that was a very interesting moment.
All you got to, okay, how big are the brakes on the front of performance cars? And how big are the brakes on the back of the performance cars?
And how big are the e-brakes?
I don't think this guy
cares.
Been to
we
a
don't
lot.
Care.
I don't think he's been to Bondurant recently.
Funny, man.
What is that guy's name? Oh, Greg, what do we think of APR tunes? They're reliable and conservative. You buy the off-the-shelf one and install it according with whatever parts and instructions they give you, and you're fine. I don't think I've ever got an email from somebody being like, APR fucked me. I've never had that happen. Brian says, should I keep a reliable daily driver, Honda Accord, and add a cheap sports car like a BRZ or MX-5? Or should I sell the Accord and get a better, more fun daily sedan like a Genesis G70, Alfa Giulia, Mercedes C43, etc.?
Good question.
I would say one sports sedan that performs at a pretty decent level is better than a boring daily driver and a slow sports car.
Well, the only caveat
to
that would be how we all have that beater that we just want to drive like a madman with, you know, within some sort of sensual, some sense of driving. And then you want to have your really cool car. So I would say go for the really cool car.
Okay.
Or the cooler car, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Oh, Luke wasn't a fan of the ISF. We recommended him. Other advice. $30,000 to $40,000, a car that for college that won't kill your insurance.
Anything with four doors.
Yeah.
That's
four doors always
do
helps, yeah. ISF, four doors.
ISF.
You can go E92.
I mean, yeah.
I don't know.
Get a good one. Right?
Well, I mean, get one for 20 and then have 10 for maintenance.
Yeah. In college, man.
I'll tell you what, it's hard to beat Japanese.
It
really is.
Honestly, I would import something. Get some weird thing from Japan.
There's some, especially for college and the go, you know, and you want something that is going to be reliable and you want something that you can have some fun with. it's just,
you
know, like
a WRX or something? Or
totally. You get an SDI. WRX or, yeah. 30, 40 grand is a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll get you the,
pick your poison.
The cleanest Evo 9 ever.
Golf R, Evo 9.
Golf R. Subaru. Golf R's are good. Golf R's are fun and they're 40 grand.
Yeah.
I would take a look at that too. Yeah. Short Geared says, I did my first track day in my 99 Civic CX stock. Good for use.
Yep.
What should my first mods be, and should Time Attack be my next step?
Roll cage, seat belts, 5-point, 6-point.
He doesn't need a roll cage for a track day. I think he's got to daily drive this thing.
It depends.
Wheels and tires, brake pads and fluid.
The first is you got to upgrade your fluid to a good, you know, good level, .5, right?
Probably .5.
Yep. Second would be the biggest bang for your bucks can be tires, man.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Without a doubt. And then as you get, and then everything's just going to
start breaking.
There's also.
Everything goes from there.
No, and there's also for a 99 Civic, there's like really interesting things you can do with sway bars. I think
that's
they
right.
Remove
I heard
the
that.
Front sway bar and then run a stiffer rear sway bar.
Okay.
It's like really, really simple to tune the suspensions of those. Like look up suspension, like budget suspension stuff for those. I think you can literally take out the front sway bar and just put the rear from like an Integra or something that's still like $8, and you can put that in and it actually makes a difference. Remember we raced that Lemons car?
Yeah.
And it handled awesome.
Yeah.
That had like $12 shocks in it and like nothing. So if you're into wrenching a little bit, like do some suspension and yeah.
You can do great things for very little money.
Yeah.
With the Civic.
Yeah. And you can keep the shit out of those cars. Scott, what is the best and easiest way to start racing? I have track experience, but can't figure out how to get into the racing aspect of it.
That's always the hurdle, right? You gotta, anything you get in, for me, when I started anything, every opportunity I won. I mean, I was wrong. I won or I was at the front. You gotta be able to walk the walk. I mean, everybody talks the talk, but you gotta walk the walk. You gotta pull it through. And
I also think there's a more obvious answer that he doesn't want to hear, which is you buy a car and enter it in a race.
There's a couple different things you can do. You can do a car, and now there's a lot of sim stuff that's happening out there too.
That too. Yeah.
So if you can go, I mean, they have some, you know, they've had some sim competitions, and if you start looking, there has been some crossover from sims. Obviously, the way I started with in go karts, work any way up. There is no easy answer for that. There is none, or everybody be doing it. Here's reality. When you look at Formula One, NASCAR, IndyCar, sports cars, the reality of it is there may be, 60 good paying jobs. And everybody globally, every driver globally wants one of those 60 jobs. It's not like a football team. They have a roster of 80 people or whatever that is per team.
And the reality of racing is at every single series up to Formula One, there are drivers who have paid to be there.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the truth.
It's the unfortunate reality of it all.
And a lot of those 60 guys are going in multiple series collecting multiple checks.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like there's 10 really good-looking dudes who fuck every chick on Tinder.
Never thought about it that way.
Because I mean? One guy can bang 30 or 40 girls, you know what I mean? So, that's a sad place now.
Is karting still a easy, affordable way? Like, if you want to race, you want to compete, it's probably the lowest cost, right?
The best, the lowest cost, and it's going to give you the most bang for your buck, the most competition, the most wheel-to-wheel, all of that. And there's even, like with Margay that's out there right now, you can... They've adopted a show up and drive. So you pay $800 or $700 or $1,000, you know, whatever that is for a weekend, and you go drive a cart that shows up, and there's, you know, 30, 40 guys out there racing with. So that you know, is a real, and a lot of guys are doing that because now they don't have to wrench on it. They don't have to worry about, you know, working on it. Who's going to do it? Who's going to take care of it? If they want to, they can. But they also can just show up and drive. And it's been a pretty good way for a lot of guys to get out there and
I'm going
to
raise my hand for the arrive and drive drivers.
Yeah.
I arrive and drive, and I don't feel the least bit bad about it.
Yeah.
I suck at wrenching. I don't want to build my own car.
Yep.
I don't want anything associated with owning my own race car. I don't want a truck. I don't want a trailer.
Right.
But I am more than happy to go, here's $2,000. I'm going to race for this endurance race this weekend. And I'm going to get
a good way to do
3 hours
it.
Of seat time in the race. And, you know, a solid 40 or 50 minutes of quali.
Yep.
And it's a great time. And then I go, thank you, sir. Good night and good luck. And I go, get on a plane and go home.
A big part of it is that you know the carts are set up right. So it's like, hey, did I screw up the gear? Or, hey, did I screw up the setup? Or do I got too much camber or too much kingpin inclination? Or I got this? You know, you can, as in anything, you can, you know, make so many changes to it. All of a sudden, it was in the window. And now it's like way out of the window. And you don't know why you're slow. Is it the cart or is it me? Or the car or me? Which one is it?
Yeah.
Just for him, last thing, Jim Hall has a racing kart school up in Ventura, and they have a racing series where once you do like 2 days of their school, you can then do arrive and drive racing. So, cool. Matt, in your area, just see if there's a kart school near you and if they do that kind of thing.
Yeah,
that too. And he had a follow-up question, which is what kind of car would you suggest? I would say find the series you want to race in and then look at the standings of what kind of car wins in those races a lot and work your way backwards.
Well, there, you know, it's, you know, I mean, people ask me all the time, you know, it's, there is no easy answer. There is none. You just got to keep your head down. Never lose your passion for doing it and just keep, even when all seems lost, you just got to keep on digging. And, you know, like with me, I mean, I don't come from a rich background. I don't come from a racing background. And so I just kept at it and 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 kept winning and kept at it. And, you know, was able to just kind of kept parlaying. And every opportunity I got, I over-delivered every time I got into a car and was able to continue to move that forward.
It's boss, man. I just saw Zach scrolled past the picture of what I think is your 53. Is there wood on it?
There is
low tide. It was called. Oh my god.
Yeah. Jesus. I sold that a year ago, though.
Oh my god. Well, that was
so. There's great. So there's a lot of great winery shots here. So we just got our last vineyard.
We didn't even talk
in.
About wine. You make wine.
I do make.
What's
wine.
What's it called?
Pruitt Vineyard.
Oh.
And you should go to pruittvineyard.com because it's just got some great drone shots of our vineyards. I mean, it's really cool stuff.
Do you sell wine?
We do, just direct consumer. So pruittvineyard.com, direct consumers.
Where is it?
Auburn, California.
Where is that? I don't know.
That's on the other side of Sacramento.
Oh,
so if you're driving from Sacramento towards Reno, it's a place
right
called Auburn.
Right off 80, right?
Oh, is that
right
it?
Off 80.
Wow.
Oh, there
that.
You go. Yeah.
Dang, that's beautiful.
That's awesome. So it's about 50 acres. We focus on Syrah. And by Wine Spectator, we've had the highest rated Syrah in the world 3 times at 96 points,
really?
95 points. Yeah.
Ooh.
And I'm the winemaker.
The fuck out
really
of here.
Cool.
Yeah. Where do you find the time?
I know, right?
You stop racing professionally.
Yeah.
So now you win this.
It's been awesome. You know, we joke because at the, you know, in the late 90s, my wife and I, we wrote 3 different children's books. So we have Racing Through the Alphabet, which was our last, Rookie Racer, which is an inspirational story, and 12 Little Race Cars, which is a countdown story.
Wait, I think Racing Through the... Is that still in print?
Yeah, they're all still... We've sold over 100,000 copies of that.
I think we bought Racing Through the Alphabet for my nephew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I gave it to most of my crew guys so they could understand what they were doing, so...
Bazing.
Oh, yeah, Hannah...
Oh, there you go.
You know what? Hannah bought that, but I actually, I'm so sorry to say, I wish I'd noticed your name. I didn't pay much attention, but it was very cute.
All, you know, they're all hardbound and full, well, you think?
Yeah.
Full
that
color
is totally the book Hannah got for them. That's awesome.
It was so much fun doing that. And then, the biggest biggest complaint we got from grandparents' parents, they'd read that book every night. Over and over. What book you want to read? Racing book. What racing book? And they said, so we went from doing something for kids, then we started the winery, something for adults.
You should just name the wines after like letters of the alphabet. It's like,
Well, he named after everything that comes from the estate is named after our kids.
Oh, go back up to Scott's helmet, Zach. You have that gold, that turned gold look on your helmet that rules. We just had someone in here. It was Justin, right?
Justin Peck.
And we were talking about that gold turned look, how to make that? I forget.
So Troy Lee paints all my stuff. He's been painting my stuff since like the early 90s. He does like cool, wicked. And I'm also a total old hot rod fan, so everything's done matte.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Van Dutch up on top. So they do this crazy scrolling up on top that Troy does. So it's really cool stuff.
So go to pruittvineyard.com. Buy yourself some wine. That's the thing you want to plug.
And it's not crap wine. It's really
world
class.
Wine Spectator said it's good. I'm going to buy some. I like it. I like your label. What's the middle one there? I like your
so
label.
So that's so 50 years of racing. That's a label we're carrying forward. Is it just a real cool illustration that
well, $75 a bottle? Whoa! Yeah. Chew.
Yeah.
I mean, best around the world. So
that is pimping. I'll buy some. 150 bottle, the championship. That's cuvee,
just
huh?
So that's just the bottle I did for recognition of 50 years of racing. We only did it one year, so it's all etched bottle and with the 50 years of racing, my medallion there.
Wow. So is that your rest of life plan is wine pretty much and fun driving for Lexus?
Great driving for Lexus, great working for Rolex, great doing the whole wine thing, and spending more time with the family. So it's all been good.
Not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig.
Yeah.
Like I said, the good Lord blessed me.
And you look like a man many years younger than you actually are.
You seem
to have gotten out of it alive, sir.
What was your name again? what did we talk about? Head injuries earlier? Yeah. No, but it's the sport has given me so much, and I'm just again blessed.
Oh, cheers!
I get to hang out with you guys, right? Tell stories.
I'm gonna buy some wine. That looks great. I'm down for it for sure. Thanks for coming in, man. And go to Pruitt Vineyard Singular Vineyard
Singular
Pruitt Vineyard. Pruett,
right?
Not the
don't
other,
get me confused with
that,
the EPA
oh my
guy.
God. I didn't even.
I got hate mail.
No,
I mean, first I said back going,
tweets?
Okay,
were you
check the
angry
spelling.
Tweets?
It's not Prui, it's Prue. I mean, and they're cussing me up one side down the other, and they got the wrong guy. I'm like,
bro, these are not smart people.
Whoa, I get that you're angry with a guy, but don't take it on me, man. I mean, it was angry emails.
The cell phones are very, very strong. No, that is a definitely
wrong guy. Wrong guy.
Scott Pruitt. Right, thanks.
Well, thanks for having
me
on, man.
I'm glad we got to spend your day off with you. I feel bad for putting you into traffic.
No problem.
In a Dodge Charger with yellow fucking shields on it. Yuck. The worst.
You just rent a car.
Take those off. They don't hook you up. You don't get a demo or something.
Well, I mean, you're flying around all the time. I mean, you just you drop at the airport. It is.
Logistically, not worth it.
Not worth it.
I feel it. But you get a demo at home, right?
Of course.
Yeah.
GSF.
Oh,
baby.
GSF.
10th anniversary.
It's the best, man. If anyone out there is thinking about a sports sedan, the GSF rules.
It rules.
I have a video on the topic. You might want to see it. It's got a real good diff.
It is awesome.
It's
a
good steering
car.
It's very,
man.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Does yours have the Superman interior? Like the LC?
I've got the 10th anniversary, so it's all this just beautiful black and blue and white and then blue carbon on the inside. So put in GSF 10th anniversary.
I want to see the blue carbon.
Oh, it's gorgeous stuff, man.
Oh yeah, look at that. That
it's all matte, so it's silver matte again, old,
the
hot rod, old school. Yeah.
Oh, that works.
Yep.
Oh, it's like that RCF track edition we saw before.
Yeah,
that looks
exactly.
Great. I was so nervous when manufacturers started painting cars in matte finish.
Yeah.
Most of them have held up so far pretty good.
I've not had a problem at all. You know, as long as you don't, don't take it through a car wash with it, got big old swirly things going on.
Whoa, is that
so check it out. Yeah,
it's a lot of blue, homie.
It's really cool.
It's heavy on the blue. That's pretty cool.
It's gorgeous.
I like it.
Yeah,
That reminds me of the Mercedes SL Silver Arrow with the panda interior. thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks, man.
That's our show for tonight. We're back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Pacific. We've got my friend Tristan Eaton, who's an incredible artist, coming in. He does, huge murals on the sides of buildings. And back in the day, he turned my Mini into an art car. It was amazing.
Oh, that dude.
Yeah, Tristan. He's the man. So he'll be here tomorrow at, I think, 1:30. We'll post the link in the morning. Thank you to all of you for listening. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. It's easy. All you need is a microphone, a connection to the internet, and ideally something to say. Have a good night.